My opponent walks in. He's like saggy pants, all this stuff, walks in. Amelia says, "Where's calamari? Where's calamari? It's time to eat." Dude, and like I was cracking up and like I didn't realize he was talking about me.
Mic check 1, 2. We are back, baby. What is going on, fam? We are back, and this time we are on location for episode 75 on Uncharted Performance, the Lollapalooza / Burning Man of strength training and functional fitness. I am your host, Powell Wentz, and our goal, as always, is to learn and apply from the best and brightest by dissecting and deconstructing our personal journeys and accumulated wealth of knowledge and experience to elevate your performance inside and outside of the confines of the gym, weight room, box, wherever you train, to become fucking awesome. Once you have enjoyed the podcast, please take a second to rate and review on iTunes. We definitely appreciate all the ratings and reviews that have been coming in over the past several weeks. It does not go unnoticed. It makes us feel pretty good about ourselves, but it, more importantly, it sheds more light on our awesome guests. If you're looking for new equipment and you support the podcast, head over to unchartedperformance.com and click that Rogue Fitness link in the sidebar. And last but not least, make sure to tag us on Instagram, Twitter, to your heart's content, to let us know when you are catching the show. So where are we this week? We are back to a familiar place, our friends over at Groove Ride. Quick footnote, for our past episodes with Zosimo, Angela, and Jen, look back to the archives for episode 5 and 48. But this time, it is with the newer team members, say that three times fast, Joe Calari of Calari Killer Fitness and the beatbox instructor at Groove Ride. As you quickly find out in our conversation, Joe can light up the room very, very quickly. He is a retired MMA fighter and a fitness entrepreneur with a heart of gold. We dive into the world of mixed martial arts, what drew him to the sport, and how it turned a one-time, quote-unquote, bully into one of the kindest and most positive people we hope you have the opportunity to meet. Getting knocked out or punched down in the face has many lessons we can learn from, both good and bad, that we cover in the episode. We talk getting knocked around a lot, why he enjoys it, his growth in the sport of mixed martial arts, and the many valuable lessons he took away from fighting in the octagon. And I finally get to say and ask something I have been waiting to do so for 74 episodes. You will just have to listen to find out what that is. We also get into developing as a personal trainer, growing your own business and brand, as well as several other topics related to nutrition, and closing out with his wonderful mission of squats over suicide, all the details regarding that mission in the episode. We jump around a little bit. In the start of the show, mainly in part due to my free association, but just hang tight. It gets really good really quick. And with that, enjoy our conversation with Joe. Take care, guys, and enjoy. Bye.
Joe, what's up, brother?
How you doing, boss?
I'm doing great. We are here with Joe Calari of Calari Killer Fitness.
There you go.
Say that three times fast.
Calari Killer Fitness, Calari Killer Fitness, Calari Killer Fitness.
And of Groove Ride, you are the beatbox instructor here.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a little bit. Thank you for hanging out.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. We are back at Groove Ride. I think I'm going to reference this. I might be incorrect on the numbers, but Zosimo, Maximo, was number 6 OG of Uncharted Performance.
Yeah.
He is the one that connected us. So my first question to you is, my new good friend, is why would Zos recommend you? Why should the Uncharted Performance, the UP Nation, why should we care?
I think what Zos and his wife Andrea really see in me, and why they referred me, is mainly because of my heart. You know, especially with having a name, Calari Killer Fitness, you know, you think it's all like, you know, bad and, you know, grindy and all that stuff. But it's mainly about just showing passion. Like, my main thing is obviously fitness and health, but I really want to just help build confidence in people. I'm all about like building self-love, you know, self-confidence, That's why I use mixed martial arts. That's why I use fitness, you know, strength training to just help bring that out in people. And I'm just, I always have a smile on my face. Andrew always says I'm like a sunshine in a bottle. So I think that's why.
Okay. So I think you, based on, you know, knowing Zassimo and having the great fortune of, you know, not only having him on the podcast, but also his wife, Angela, and also Jen Speed, I think based on that kind of description, you fit in very well. Mm-hmm. Very nice of you. I was looking at the staff. So this is kind of off the cuff. But I was looking at the staff for Groove Ride.
Yeah.
And it's predominantly female. Mm-hmm. And there's you and Zassimo. Mm-hmm. So how does it feel to work in a predominantly female environment?
I like it in a sense where I feel like women should be empowered more mm-hmm. and learn how, especially with beatbox. I mean, today I just taught 16 females, you know, how to defend themselves.
Okay.
So like teaching that and especially just, you know, all about just bring out that self-love, self-confidence mm-hmm. and all that scene and anything where I can empower somebody, especially like a female in this day and age where it's like, if you can really bring that out in them and see, you know, really promote that, hey, women are strong too. I mean, it's a great feeling. So especially, like I said, today I just got done teaching 16 females okay. how to defend themselves and, you know, push-ups, burpees, box jumps, mm-hmm. hitting the bag, all that stuff, kicking the bag. Like, it's awesome seeing that. It's like, I don't want to mess with any of those girls.
So So let's take it kind of, there's different avenues we can go to, but we're kind of joking off before we start recording. What'd you do today?
Oh, first off, I woke up, did some business stuff.
Okay.
Immediately got a workout in, what we talked about, some squats, some deadlifts.
What kind of business stuff did you do?
Online coaching.
Okay.
So like usually every Saturday, it's mandatory for my online coaching clients to send me an email throughout the week. Just any questions that they have on nutrition or the programming or if they want to switch something up. Because I always try to emphasize like, hey, you guys might get bored during a workout or you guys might want to switch it up or, you know, maybe it's too hard. You might want to like lower the intensity a little bit or nutritional questions too. So what I do, what's different from most like personal trainers or nutritionists is I'll say, hey, if you're going out with your friends, let's say in 3 to 4 days and you're going to a restaurant, tell me the restaurant you're going to. I'll scan the menu which I can find online. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you everything that you should be eating in your macros.
Okay.
That way we're up to date to par. And it's just one of those things where I like to stay connected, even though like the clients I train are all over, you know, the world. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I like to stay connected on a weekly basis where it's like, man, this guy isn't just giving me like a cookie cutter workout program. Like he's actually right there. Like if I need to call him, text him, FaceTime him, email him, like he's there.
So no, it's actually, excuse me as I burp on the mic on camera. Party foul. It happens.
You're human.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. You mentioned something interesting, the mandatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your clients have to check in.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah.
Every week with you?
Yeah. So like what I have my own software on my app that people can download or just use the software on the computer.
Okay. What's the software? Might as well plug it.
I use through Trainerize, but you can download on the iOS or Google Play Store, calorikillerfitness.com. And everything's all set up in there. So basically after like we discussed going through back and forth on some emails or some text messaging or just a phone call, like what your specific, you know, whether it's fat loss or you want to build some muscle mm-hmm. or whatever case may be, whatever your fitness goals is, we're going to discuss that. And then I'll usually take, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 days, giving you a good solid workout program for your first 30 days with a meal plan included. Mm-hmm. But I make it mandatory for them to reach out to me because one, it shows that they're committed, it shows that they're in it. I don't want to train clients that just want to sign up for the program but not actually do it.
Yeah.
Like I like giving people results. I like giving people the satisfaction that, hey, you're building strength, you're burning fat, like all that. So I can make it mandatory, one, because I get to see if they check into their workouts or not. Like I get an email from the software every night on who checks in and who doesn't check in.
Okay.
So I'll usually call them out on that if that's the case may be. Like let's say if I have a client that missed 3 workouts, you know, and they were supposed to do 4 that week, you know, I'm going to respond back to their email like, hey, you know, let's really step up this next week. I'm not going to harass them and be hard about it. I'm going to try to like encourage them. Maybe they were just going through a rough time or they just weren't feeling it.
Yeah.
Like everybody's human. Everyone has their good days and bad days.
Okay.
But I make it mandatory because a lot of people get so confused with nutrition. I mean, you look online, there's like this diet, there's all this stuff. So I try to keep it very simple. My program through the app, it's connected to my Fitness Pal. Mm-hmm. So I'm up to date on all the macros that I can see on the daily.
Okay. Very cool, man. How many online clients do you have?
I got about like 54. So okay. It's not a lot, but
it's a good amount. Do you do all the coaching?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm the only person that's doing
it. That's actually, for one person, that's a good amount.
It's a lot, but I mean, it's give or takes. Some weeks or some months it might be down, some weeks or months it might be more.
Okay. How far do you program out?
30 days. Always 30 days. Unless I have a client that really wants to, let's say deadlifts, they want to get their deadlift up to like 50, 60 pounds, which is a lot.
Yeah.
I'll give them maybe a 12-week program. Okay. You know, or it's something more
specific to the client.
Exactly. Okay, it's more realistic.
Gotcha. All right. So I cut you off and we definitely sidetracked. So after the business stuff, what'd you do?
After business, got my workout in.
Okay.
You know, some squats, deadlifts, and my own kettlebell swings.
Okay.
And then immediately rushed up here to teach beatbox class.
Why did you do squats, deadlifts, and kettlebell swings?
That's my favorite type of lifting is like powerlifting. So, and this would be a good little side point as well that we can hit on is the reason why I got into like working out and all that stuff is like growing up. I mean, I had a very good life. I was very fortunate, you know, I'm blessed to have the life that I was given. But I seem like my head always plays tricks on me, whether it's friends in school, whether it's like girlfriend problems, whatever the case may be. My head always seemed to be playing tricks on me.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Euclid.
Okay.
You know, and my parents sent me to a Christian school throughout high school, you know, and middle school and elementary school too.
Okay.
So I had great friends, great family members, but it just felt like my head was always playing tricks on me. So I used working out as a way to get out of my own head.
Okay.
Elliot Hulse is one of my like top fitness guys that I look up to.
You guys, I was going to say, you guys kind of, you guys look related.
Well, thank you. A little bit. So he talks all the time about like getting out of your own head, like get out of your head. And I try to emphasize that in my own training and with my clients' training is get out of your head. So like anytime I'm feeling depressed, anytime I'm having a bad day, anytime, even if I'm like, let's say overconfident, over cocky, whatever the case may be, way too prideful, I'll go work out. I'll go hit some squats or some deadlifts. And man, I'm just like slap in the face. Like, dude, Joe, you're not as tough as you thought you were, you know, or vice versa. If I'm having a bad day, go hit some squats, go hit some deadlifts. And it's like, all right, Joe, like, you know, you got this. Like, let's build up that strength. Let's build up that character, not just on the outside, but on the inside too. So
I forget whose quote it is. I think it's the gentleman that has this is awful. Actually, I don't know this, but the iron doesn't lie to you.
Never heard of that. I like that though.
It's what I like is that his a lot. Name? Shit. All right, I'll try to bring it back. I can't. I'm gonna get hate mail for this. Not that much, but, Rollins, Henry Rollins. I think Henry Rollins is the quote that is. But he's a legend, a rock legend and a poet, and obviously big into fitness.
Mm.
But no, that's one of his quotes. So that's kind of made me think of that. So nice, I apologize. Man. Again, I digress like I do all the time. All right. So after your workout, how was class?
It was amazing. Full class today. I love the energy. It's great, especially when it's only females in here. It's great because sometimes those like females need that like wake up call. Like, hey, I am strong. I am tough. Like, and just sweat all over the floor. And just like at the end of class, like everyone's like exhausted, but have the biggest smile on their face because it's like they got through it. You know, they got to the end of the destination.
Okay. And we're just for all transparency, it is about 3 o'clock right now. So you got all that in on a Saturday.
Well, then I went back to the house.
Okay.
I had to train a client.
I'm sorry.
It's not over yet.
So, I mean, that's a pretty big handful on a Saturday, right? For most people that don't usually. What time do you get up?
Usually around 5.
Yeah. Every day?
Yeah. No, usually like Monday through Friday, like 4:30. Saturday and Sunday, I sleep until 5.
Okay. So just the point of reference. What time do you usually go to bed?
Usually around like 9, 9:30.
Okay.
I go to bed pretty early, I think.
No, but you get up early.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. Do you eat breakfast?
No.
Okay. So let's talk about that real quick. Why don't you eat breakfast?
I'm a huge advocate of intermittent fasting.
Okay.
And I wish I would have learned about intermittent fasting a long time ago.
Okay.
But I started doing intermittent fasting about...
How much do you weigh now?
Oh. 190, 192.
You're a big 190.
Thank you. It's because I have chicken legs. I don't have calves, by the way.
Okay.
Like they don't grow.
I have chicken legs. You don't have chicken legs. How tall are you?
About 6'1".
Okay. You look taller than 6'1".
Oh, thank you.
But, sorry. Again, I'm blowing up your spot way too much. But no, intermittent fasting. You're a big fan of it. Why?
Yeah. Excuse me. I love intermittent fasting. One, because I was so busy. So I also have a day-to-day job as well, you know, where I'm working. And I felt like, one, to get in good shape, everyone was telling me, like the industry basically was telling me, like, you know, Google search how to do this, how to do that. 6 to 8 small meals a day, you know, eating every 2 to 3 hours, you know, building up your metabolism, you know, burning the fat. That's great. That's perfect. Me, I'm Italian. You put a small portion in front of me, that's like a slap in the face. Like, okay. I can't expect to eat that. So I really got into intermittent fasting about, man, I want to say like 3-4 months ago when I first heard about it and did a lot of research. Because anytime I'm going to, you know, do something, I want to make sure it's, first off, there's plenty of benefits, whether that's health benefits, mental benefits, and the mental benefits, that's really what makes me want to stick with it, is the mental clarity. I feel so much more focused, more energized. But going throughout the day...
Is that now? Do you feel that now? And is it? Did you feel that way when you started?
When I started, it wasn't as hard as what a lot of people, like on YouTube or on Google.
This is for my own personal benefit right now. I'm asking these questions.
It takes about 3 to 4 days. Okay. So like the reason why it's hard for a lot of people to start with and why they usually fall off the boat is because your body's a machine. So basically, you went throughout your whole entire life always eating breakfast. All of a sudden, you stop eating breakfast and you wait 5, 6, 7, 8 hours before you have your first meal. Your body's not going to like that. Your body's saying, what are you doing to me? But eventually, it's going to get used to it. And like those hours are going to go by so quick. Okay. And that's exactly what happens with me.
Gotcha. Okay. Do you work out on an empty stomach?
Yeah, first thing in the morning. So I'll wake up at like 4:30. The gym opens up at 5. I'll go to the gym for about 45 minutes to an hour. And then I'll have nothing but black coffee, green tea sometimes, but I usually just stick with black coffee. Yeah. And then water, like no calories at all.
Okay. And you've been able to maintain your weight?
No, I want to say I lost about 10, 15 pounds.
Okay.
But it was all fat. Okay. Like it was great because I didn't have to change up my diet at all. It was purely just like... I'm starting to get like those nice lean abs when I was fighting again, you know?
All right, so great segue. The reason why we're at, well, the main reason.
Yeah.
The main reason why we're here is that one topic that we have not had the privilege of discussing with anyone really is in depth. We had the fortune of going down to Endeavor down in Columbus a while back to talk to Aaron Jannetty and Rob McKeeman on self-defense. And kind of how martial arts really plays into the old kind, how it can benefit, you know, CrossFit, Olympic weightlifters, just general fitness, general physical preparedness. But we haven't talked to anyone that's actually, you know, fought in the octagon.
Yeah.
So, why did you start fighting?
Yeah. So. This is probably the best story, and hands down, no one else you're going to hear this story from. So I mentioned...
I hope it's not your YouTube video.
No. So
we'll link up that video.
Okay.
So you guys understand the reference.
So as I mentioned earlier, I was growing up in a Christian home, Christian schools. So me and my buddy, we actually got in trouble one day. I forgot what we did. We were in our sophomore year of high school, sophomore, junior, something like that. And we had to stay afterwards and clean down the lunch table. So we were talking about George St. Pierre versus BJ Penn 2, their second time they fought. And I never saw a fight before until I saw that fight. And I guess Josh was watching those fights. He's like, yeah, man, I watch that stuff. Like, it's so cool. Well, the dean of the school at the time, he's no longer there anymore. The dean of the school was overhearing us. He's like, oh, man, you guys like that stuff? And we're like, yeah, like it's awesome. Like, it's like boxing, but like extreme, you know, because it was all fresh. It was all new. He's like, why don't you guys come over to my house this Saturday at like, you know, 8 in the morning, 9 in the morning. We're like, okay, cool. So we go there. I'm going to just throw this out there. He beat the crap out of us. And it was literally the best feeling in the world. So the reason why he beat the crap out of us was one.
That was the first question. But go ahead.
One, I didn't know how to block. So like I was a big dude in high school. I was about 220, 225, a big kid. I was kind of a punk, honestly, like a little bully, you know? So it's like. We'll go into that a little bit later, but like I thought I was tough. And then, you know, throwing the gloves at us, showing us what to do, how to punch properly, and then having our little sparring session where, you know, I didn't know how to block. I didn't know any of this stuff. So it was that moment where it's like hit me in the face where it's like, man, all these muscles, doesn't mean nothing. Like if I can't use my body as my own self-defense, as you know, an advantage, I'm worthless, you know? Okay. So it was a huge wake up call.
So why did beating up feel good? Getting you beat up. Sorry.
I would say,
well, cause that sounds kind of sadistic.
It sounds weird, right? Yeah.
It's like, you have a problem, Joe.
Yeah, I probably do. I would say it was just like the wake up call. Like I said, where it really just like hit the emphasis on like, hey, you're big, you're strong, but somebody much smaller than you, because our dean was smaller than us, like could throw you around like a ragdoll, you know, wrestling, take you down, submit you, you know, boxing, kickboxing, like you're helpless, you know, and it was just that moment where I fell in love with it.
So what happens next?
I trained for a solid year and a half. My dean, well, I was training with my buddy and the dean's son, he would also come down there too.
Where did you guys train at?
In his basement.
Okay.
Now, his basement, like, it's not like a basement you think of. You go down there, there's weights everywhere. Uh-huh. There's the barbell. There's, like, three heavy bags, like speed bags. Gym, yeah, mats everywhere. So, okay, home cool. gym, exactly. So, we trained for a solid year and a half, and I begged him. I'm like, please let me get a fight. Please let me get a fight. You know, he's like, no, you're not even 18 yet. You got to wait, you know, to even be 18. So,
what did training look like?
Training looked like it was basically we were training, I want to say, twice a week. We would have our grappling days, and then we would have our stand-up days. Okay. So our grappling days would be more in close quarters, you know, working on clinch, judo work, lots of wrestling, and then jiu-jitsu. So jiu-jitsu was like a big eye-opening to me when I realized somebody with their legs can make you tap out, and they didn't use their arms at all. I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. So then we would have our boxing nights where we just work over different techniques and kickboxing. My dean would always say, like, hey, like, you're a natural born kickboxer. Like, that's what you're good at. You kick really hard, you punch fast, you punch hard. But I love jiu-jitsu. Like, it was like one of the things I was good at, and I was bad at jiu-jitsu, but my heart was in jiu-jitsu. Because I'm like, all right, this is cool. Like, I can make someone tap out and surrender. I didn't even have to punch him, you know? Okay.
So at that point, that was the training. It was a couple times a week.
Yeah.
That's what you guys focused on for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get to that first fight, I'm going to take a quick break. Leave the audience waiting.
Okay, suspense. Suspense. I like it.
All right, guys, we'll be right back with Joe. Hang on.
A lot of really good trainers start fitness businesses, and most of them are out of business within a year. Fact. Why? Being a good trainer, having equipment and a box are only a small part of having a successful fitness business. You have to tackle expenses, overhead, books, taxes, employees, and marketing, just to name a few. The Masters in Fitness Business podcast, hosted by Jim Adams, helps trainers climb the learning curve from trainer to business owner without making mistakes that will drive you out of business. You get to stand on the shoulders of giants as Jim interviews successful fitness business owners and discuss their mistakes and successes. Hosted by an actual fitness business owner who interviews actual fitness business owners. No fake internet gurus, only people in the trenches day in and day out doing the actual work to be successful. I wanted to share that experience with you. I am a bit of a podcast junkie myself. It's a great way to learn, especially when commuting, meal prepping, and even training, depending on what the day calls for. And I'm always excited to discover new channels. Once I heard about Jim's podcast, quickly listened to a few episodes, and I am now a proud subscriber. Don't wait. Definitely include the Masters in Fitness Business podcast in your library. And make sure to leave Jim a stellar rating and review. It is certainly well-deserved. For the link to Jim's podcast, make sure to check out the show notes of this episode at our website, unchartedperformance.com. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the rest of the show. Take care, guys.
All right, we are back with Joe. What's going on, man?
What's happening, boss?
You haven't beat me up yet. So
not yet.
I'm doing right. All right, let's get into that first fight, man. Mm-hmm. When were you allowed to fight, and why were you allowed to fight?
In the state of Ohio, you have to be you have to get your license, qualify, you know, and you just have to be 18 years old, basically. And I think my first fight was in October. I wanted to fight like in
How
September.
Old were you? 18?
18, okay. Yeah, right at the gate. So flashback, 17 years old, training for the solid like year and a half. 18 years old, qualified, got my license. And then the first fight was in October. And man, the first fight was amazing. I got my butt kicked, and it again. Was again. Like, there's something about me just getting punched in the face that I love.
Me and you're opposite. I have a thing that if I don't know you very well, uh-huh. you're like in my space, I get very tense. And I get,
oh, really?
I get aggravated. It's a work in progress. Selena's been helping me with it a lot. But sorry again, I cut you off. Sorry, go ahead.
So I show up to the fight, and man, it was just like the whole entire time I'm like shaking, like uh-huh. butterflies and all this okay. stuff. I remember going to the weigh-in room. This is the funniest story ever. Everyone's like in their like boxers and all that stuff, yeah. and like everyone's jacked, shredded, like ripped. Because I didn't know about cutting weight and all that stuff. Okay. All these guys are like wrestlers, anyways. So they've been doing this for years.
Who was your coach?
Dan Buell. Yeah, okay. He was the dean of the school.
So he was the one that took you to the mm-hmm. fight.
Yeah, and my okay. buddy, my training partner Josh, he was my my cornerman. Okay. So it was just the three of us, okay. you know. And all I right. had obviously my friends and family, yeah. you know, come to the fight. But I step on the scale and I made weight. You know, I was underweight, whatever. My opponent walks in. He's like saggy pants, all this stuff. Walks in, immediately says, "Where's calamari? Where's calamari? It's time to eat." Dude, and like I was cracking up, and like I didn't realize he was talking about me. I didn't know who he was, you yeah. know, because all I knew from him was he was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, and he was like 26 years old. That's okay. all I knew. Mm-hmm. And so this guy's talking about me the whole entire time, so I'm like, oh crap, like it just got real. Yeah. So fast forward, weigh in, whatever, meet him, do the pictures. And then we go get some food. That's the one thing with the amateur fight game is like you weigh in early in the morning, usually around like 10, 11 o'clock. You don't fight until like 6, 7, 8. You know, if you're higher up on the card, even longer.
Okay.
So I'll go get some food. And then my coach is like, hey, go find a quiet spot somewhere, even if it's in a car. Take a nap. And I'm like, I can't take a nap, man. Yeah, I'm like all amped up. He's like, you're going to lose all your energy. Like you're like just – you know, on high right now, like yeah. go take a nap, calm down, whatever. I tried, could not at all. I had the earphones in, couldn't take a nap, whatever. So I'm just waiting, you know, friends and family show up to the fight. You know, I see them, you know, all that stuff. Then, you know, we hear the big announcements like, hey, fighters come in, it's time to get wrapped up, you know, hand wraps, your gloves get fitted for all that stuff. Excuse me. And then it hit me. I'm like, man, this is real. Like, I've never put on MMA gloves before. It was always boxing gloves. And, like, when they had the MMA gloves, I didn't realize how small it was. Okay. And I'm like, wow, like, okay. So, once again.
Could you have been any less prepared?
Yeah. Oh, I could have been definitely less prepared. Okay. I could have been more prepared, but yeah, okay. I could have been definitely less prepared. All right. So, once again, man, I start hitting myself with the gloves. Something about me and hitting okay. myself just to get the feel of, like, it's going to be like. So, and then. Like, we get the cue, like, maybe 20, 30 minutes, whatever. We're, like, fourth in line on the fight card. So, I'm doing mitts in the back with my coach, and I'm feeling good. I'm sharp. I'm fast. Like, I had a good weight cut and everything like that. I'm feeling good. My opponent walks back there, and, like, there was curtain separating us, rips open the curtain and was like, get ready. Like, I'm going to kick your butt. You know, he didn't say it in the nicest sense, yeah. just like that. But I was like, wow, like this dude's like in my head now, yeah. you know? And my coach came and told me, stay focused. And I'm like, man, this is a trip, you know? Yeah. This is something different. So they call my name and I'm shaking like a leaf. I never experienced anything like this before. I'm 18 years old versus a 26-year-old who's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. Okay. Like, it's like, wow, okay. And this dude's calling me calamari. Like, I don't know what to expect. So I walk out to the tunnel. There's smoke. There's lights and all that stuff. And I had T.I. Big Things Poppin' was supposed to play for my walkout song. They messed up my CD and they gave me some rock and roll song. And I'm not a rock and roll guy at all. So I didn't think it was my time to come out. And like promoters were like yelling at me like, let's go. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, that's not my song. He's like, I don't care. Let's go. So I'm like, okay. I go up there, like, you know, doing this whole thing. They're rubbing me down, you know, checking for any, you know, knives or anything like that on me before you have to go in the cage. My coach is giving me the Vaseline, the rub down. I walk inside the cage. And when you watch like the UFC UFC is a bigger octagon. But if you watch any of these fights, like on TV or local television, you think it's bigger. until you're actually in there and you realize it's like we're from like here to here. Like this is so tiny. Like okay. There's no getting out of this one. So I just remember standing there just looking at the guy like, hey, like, yeah, let's do it. Like okay. they locked the cage. You're stuck. Like you can't get out of there. You can't just tap out before the fight even starts. So he's walking back and forth and he's just looking at me like he's going to kill me. So I'm like, okay, I trained for this. Like I got this. And we come out the gate. He hits me in the face and I'm like, okay, cool. Like he doesn't hit hard at all. I got this.
Okay.
I threw a leg kick at him. He backs away a little bit. He's like spin around me in circles, immediately shoots in for a takedown. I sprawl, but then he keeps his foot underneath me, takes me down the ground. Now this was, like I said, I wasn't the best at jiu-jitsu, wasn't the best at wrestling. As soon as we fall, he gets me right into full mount. And I tried bucking, I tried sweeps, anything I could, shrimping to just get out of there. And he's just punching me in the face, just like crazy amounts. And this is the best part of the story, is even though I'm getting punched in the face and I'm blocking, I'm over by my coach, like on that side of the cage. And my coach is telling me what to do. And I'm telling him, like, I'm actually having a conversation, like, hey, I'm trying that. It's not working. Like, he told me, like, buck, grab the arm. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that. I'm still getting punched in the face. Like, nothing's working at all. So probably like 20, 30 seconds later, the ref stops the fight. And I understand the rules. Like, if you can't defend yourself or advance or get out of a position, they're going to end the fight.
Yeah.
It wasn't the fact that I was taking a damage and all this stuff. Yeah. It was he was winning. You know, okay. I'm a fresh time fighter. Yeah. They don't want me getting injured. You know, I understand. So I wasn't like mad or pissed off at all. So I remember just waking up the next morning, man, just two black eyes, like my nose broken. And I had the biggest smile on my face because I'm like, I did it. Okay. You know, it's like I did it. And now the hardest part was going back to training. And my coach is like, hey, man, like, I don't want you like fighting anymore. He's like, after seeing that, he's like, I still want to train you. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I don't think you should fight anymore. You know?
Okay.
And I remember just, it was probably like the worst breakup ever, you know, when you like love a female and she breaks up with you. It was like that. I was like, dang, man, like I love this. Like I just found what it is. So I trained my butt off. I trained my butt off and just improved, begged him. Let me get a fight. Finally, this was, and I say finally, like it was a long time. It was literally 3 months of hard work. I fought then again in like January or February. It was not too long ago at all. He's like, yeah, you know, coach you again. Let's do this. I fought another guy, like 24 years old. His name was Marcus, and we came out the gate just swinging. It was a slugfest. He was a wrestler. The first round, he actually takes me down, gets me a full mount, and I actually like took a few in the shots in the face, but I actually got that buck sweep, and immediately looked over at my coach, like kind of winked at him, like in the middle of the cage. But we grinded out. Bloodbath and all that stuff, but I ended up winning split decision. And it was from that moment on where I was like, okay, like I don't suck at this as bad as what I thought I did compared to that first fight. It's all a learning experience. Mm-hmm. So
how many total fights did you have? 13, 12?
13? I it was 7 and 6 or 8 and 6. I gotta Google search me. I don't even remember. It's been so long, but
so around like, you know, over 10. At least.
Yeah.
How did, I guess, you evolved from those first two fights? Because how did your training, I guess, change from that first to second fight and then from that second fight on?
Yeah. So from the first fight, I had that like that fire behind me where it was like, okay, like we're not doing this for anybody else. We're not doing this for fame, for, you know, show, whatever. Like I'm doing this to like get my revenge. Like to, I'm not going to quit with a losing record. I'm not going to go in there and say, hey, I'm an MMA fighter and only had one fight and ended up being a loss. So like I did it for that purpose reason. After that second one, it was like, okay, that fight was good. I won by split decision. It wasn't where I wanted it to be. So training up until the third fight, lots of wrestling, lots of jiu-jitsu because that's where I was weak at.
Based on that first fight.
Yeah, yeah. And then basically just, we trained a lot on focusing on footwork, being a boxer. Like I didn't really get it down until like after that second fight. So I had my third fight probably 2 months after that, and I ended up winning the fight in the second round by a KO. Okay. So that was a great feeling.
Nice. You didn't get punched. You got punched in the face more than once, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we cleared that up. So this is my moment.
Ooh, that I've been waiting for. I love it. Say it. Give it to me.
So, you know, everything goes according to your plan until you get punched in the face. I think that's Mike Tyson's famous quote, right? So what happens, right? Let's say, and not based on your first fight or your second, let's say you've got a few under your belt, right? You've got, you know, 6, 7 in already. You're fairly tenured, I guess, so to speak. You've been in Octagon a few times. How do you react when you get taken down, when you get punched in the face, and it's not going according to plan?
It's all about checking your emotions first and foremost.
Okay.
So, and that's what I teach a lot in boxing classes is, or even self-defense classes that I teach with personal training, is find your breathing, find your emotions. Like, don't fight out of a reaction.
How do you do that?
It's hard, but it's more of a mental thing.
Okay.
Like, where it's like, you got to catch your breath. You got to realize, like, hey, even though, let's say I got punched in the face, I got knocked down, the guy's on top of me punching me in the face.
That's a very hard time to find your breath.
Very hard time. Very hard. Like, probably the worst. But it's all about realizing that, hey, if he's still punching me in the face, the fight's not over. Okay. It's like, we got a little bit left in the gas tank. Let's go. Let's give it 110%. Like, let's get out of this bad position. Let's advance to even, like, less bad of a position. Let's say, like, half guard, or, you know, side control, or whatever. The guy's on top of you being guard. Like, even though we're on our back, like, we're not out. Like, don't count the dog out of a fight. So, like, let's say you go into the
did you train that specifically?
Yeah.
Outside of
– Yeah. We train always bad positions first.
Okay.
So that's what I love with my first coach is rolling is – especially after my first fight – is every time we started jiu-jitsu or on the ground, I would be on my back and have somebody on top of me in full mount.
Okay.
So I that was probably the key thing that helped me the most.
It wasn't only getting out of that bad position specifically, but also working on your mental game, being in that bad position.
Yeah, and getting not necessarily comfortable, because you never want to get too comfortable with, you know, being in a bad position.
Hey, I'm hanging out, getting punched in the
face. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You want to just have that split barrier between, like, freaking out, where it's like, hey, we got, like, a little bit of energy. Like, let's just escape and try to do whatever we can to, like, create some space and get out of this position. And then just finding out how to do it technically, but also not getting your emotions involved.
Okay. How do you bounce back? So that first fight you mentioned, you know, this is – you're not going to stop at one, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't – you know, you didn't go – 12-1, right? Or 13-1. Mm-hmm. You won a few, you lost a few. Obviously, you won more than you lost. But how did you how do you react? And don't say I'm a positive guy, because I know you are. And you have an awesome smile. It's true. How do you, I guess, learn or, you know, train again to not only react in the ring, but, you know, outside the ring, if it doesn't go your way, you come out of there and you lost, be it, I think, and what's the worst way to lose?
Knockout? Yeah.
Okay. So let's say you get knocked out. How do you come back from that for the next fight?
Mm-hmm.
Versus a win.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I would, looking back at it now that I'm retired, I'm done out of the sport, I realized that I liked my losses more than I liked my victories, because whenever I would have a victory, I would not necessarily train as hard. Like, hey, I won that fight. Like, we can like, you know, die down a little bit on the hard training, on the hard work ethic and everything like that. But after a loss, like, that's when I'm like, okay, like, let's grind hard in jiu-jitsu. Let's grind hard in MMA. Let's grind hard in boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai. Let's grind hard in the gym, squats, deadlifts. Like, let's focus on whatever we can to just become a beast. So that way it's like, it's not necessarily like, you know, deep and down inside, but the greatest achievement was when I saw somebody, I think it was like my second fight compared to my like 11th fight. And they're like, dude, you're a whole different person.
Okay.
Like, you're a whole different animal. And I would say it's probably because of the losses, because that's what helped motivate me the most.
How did the – now, there's one person in this room that loves this question. I'm being sarcastic a little bit. But how did the ring change you outside of the ring?
It definitely made me a better person.
How?
Because, and I love saying this, I learned to never judge a book by its cover.
Okay.
My first time, when I stopped training with my coach, and I went over to Griffin Roll MMA in Mentor, Ohio, I was rolling with some of the guys that are literally half my size. you know, tiny, skinnier, you know, you think, hey, you can power through them. I even had a few fights, whatever the case may be. These guys, all they did was jiu-jitsu, you know, in the gis. And walking in there, I never trained in a gi before. You know, I threw one on first time. I rolled this small guy, and he rolled me around like a pretzel. He rolled me around effortlessly. I'm huffing and puffing, sweating. He's smaller than me and it's not even like catching his breath or anything like that. So that's when it really woke, like, was a big wake-up call. It was like this guy is just like an average guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just ridiculous. So especially after fights, fighting people that are smaller and literally being kicked so hard where I felt like my arm was broken or being punched so hard or taken down, whatever the case might be, against smaller opponents, you kind of have like that light bulb effect where it's like, okay, like nobody walks around saying I'm an MMA fighter. Like MMA fighters don't walk around with like tap out shirts.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
so it's like, you know, if they're wearing a tap out shirt, they're probably not an MMA fighter, but just normal guys, you know, where it's just like, man, like they can do some really big damage, you know, to anybody who they come across for like self-defense purposes, you know, a fight or anything like that. So it really just helped me develop as a person outside to never judge a book by its cover. So like I said, like growing up, you know, being a bigger guy in high school, being kind of a bully, kind of a punk is what I would, you know, call myself, describe myself as.
You were an asshole.
Yeah, basically. like I'd pick on kids a little bit. It was like getting picked on and bullied by somebody smaller than me and tapped out, you know, it's just like, wow, like it was real, like I realized I had a big head in high school. Or it's like, I, you know, that was one thing where I can really develop on myself, which I did. I'm grateful for.
Awesome. And if you guys are paying attention, obviously we're asking questions specific to MMA, but you know, what we try to hopefully present to the audience and the listeners is that, you know, getting punched in the face can be metaphorically speaking, right? So if you don't get that job, that project doesn't work out, you know, whatever it may be that you're working on, you know, take this as guidance. When you get literally punched in the face, there's some things that you can apply from Joe, hopefully, to whatever your situation might be.
And like if one door closes that you had your eye on, say a job opportunity, like who knows, that job could have sucked if you actually did get the job, or something bad could have happened. Like, you know, it's not in their timing, you know, it's just whatever the case may be.
And this might sound like the, I don't know, like the kind of the jargon, but don't give up, right? You got literally beat the shit out of you. I'm going to try to exaggerate. You got your shit kicked in. But you came back, right? And you came back smiling, right?
Yeah.
So having a good attitude about it, I think, is fucking key and awesome that you did. Did you have multiple coaches at any time?
I did.
Okay.
So I first started training with Dan Buell. You know, he's my first coach through my first four fights. And then after that, he was close friends with Jason Dent at Griffin Royal Academy in Monroe, Ohio. He then introduced me over there, you know, got involved, started training with those guys. And man, I thought I was good until I met those guys. Man, dude, they are good over there. That's a great team. The thing I like the most about Griffin Roll is it's all about technique. So how you punch, and I thought I knew what I was doing until, you know, Jason and the other team members, you know, Donnie Walker, they actually went over my form, you know, where it's like, hey, you're not actually ready to fight at all. And I already had four fights. They're like, yeah, you're not ready to fight. It's like, you got a lot of work to do on before you can actually fight. So hearing that, obviously it sucked, you know, it was a slap in the face. But it made me work harder, you know, it made me a better fighter afterwards until they gave me permission and gave me the acceptance to, hey, now you're ready, you know, and then after that, it was a roller coaster ride, you know, and I loved every minute of it.
Did you ever do any strength training?
Oh, yeah. But that was outside of the gym.
Who was in charge of that?
No one. Me.
Okay.
I was in charge of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did that work out?
It was great. So at the time, I was up at Lakeland Community College in Kirtland. And me and my buddy, Jonathan, all we do is just literally go to class, work out.
Okay.
Go to class, work out.
Great life, man.
Yeah, just nothing but deadlifts, squats, you know, and just whatever we can find, you know, different CrossFit workouts.
Did you cater your, once you got into, you know, MMA kind of, you know, along your career, did you tailor your training, your strength training at all for your MMA fights?
Yeah. So it's all depends on who I'm versing. If I'm versing a kickboxer, I'm going to kind of stay away from the whole weightlifting, and I want to focus more on speed, you know, evasive techniques.
Okay.
If I'm versing more of a wrestler, then I want to make sure I'm hitting the gym harder as far as deadlifts and squats, because I'm not a wrestler. The guy's been doing it for years. It's like I want to make sure I have at least somewhat kind of a strength to back myself up in cage.
any type of conditioning work outside of the MMA space? So outside of Griffin Roll.
Like flipping tires, okay. You know, hitting tires with hammers, sprints. Me and my buddy, we would always do hill sprints, mm-hmm. You know. And he actually jokes around because still to this day, we still work out. He's still my best friend. Mm-hmm. Still to this day, was like, man, Joe, I wish you were doing MMA again because I've never been in that best shape of my life.
Yeah.
So like by me training, it got him in the best shape of his life because he was right there with me. Yeah.
Would you change anything about your MMA career?
Yeah, definitely. So I want to say after my sixth fight, I think I was 5-2. And I made a decision to go down to the 155 weight class. And at the time, I was walking around at like 185, 190, and I would always cut down to 170. That was my weight class, welterweight. So I decided to drop down even more weight, go down to 155. I lost 4 straight fights in a row. And it was horrible, horrible, horrible. But probably one of the second best learning experiences because, one, I figured out, like, how my body works. Mm-hmm. You know, that my body needs, like, calories. Like, it shouldn't be going down to that much weight, okay. That little of weight. And, two, just it's more of a mental thing, you know, because, like, I've never actually had a hard weight cut, like mm-hmm. a weight cut, you know, to make the weight until I was doing 155. And – doing just, you know, basically not eating much and doing the 2-3 gallon waters a day and then coming up to the fight, you know, 24, 48 hours, you know, having very little water, sometimes even just like a bottle of water a day, mm-hmm. especially the day before or the morning of, just sitting in a sauna, not drinking anything, just literally putting pennies in my mouth to get saliva up so I could spit it out. Yeah. It made me stronger mentally because I'm like, man, like, first off, I'm not going to take food for granted anymore because I love food like so much more. But second was like, all right, like when life sucks, like it could be worse. You could be in 4 hoodies and some sweatpants and sucking on pennies in a sauna.
that's the intro to this interview.
Nice.
That's going to be the pre-clip. Just make a note of that. How did you transition out?
At the time, I was working at Giant Eagle as well, uh-huh. You know, and I was at Lakeland. At the time, I just wanted to focus more on just a better career path for me.
Okay.
You know, no disregards to Giant Eagle at all. I just, you know, I wanted to make more money. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to be a better businessman and focus more on school because I wasn't doing so well in it. So I transitioned out. And then, you know, that's when I just got involved with more of the training aspect. And, you know, a few years down the road, that's when I got my personal training degree and then uh-huh. nutritionist degree. And then, now I'm just helping people just change their lives.
So being a personal trainer and being a fighter seem to be at odds. And what I mean is MMA seems like, from an outsider's perspective, a very kind of selfish about you, right?
Yeah.
It's just you're training for yourself so you can perform the best in that ring in that next fight versus being a personal trainer. It's about, hopefully, I can't say this for the whole industry, but the intention, right, is to be there for that client or for those clients. So mm-hmm. it's, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it's totally opposite from an outsider's perspective, right?
Yeah.
Here, I'm just like, this is all about me kind of thing. You know, it has to be about me because otherwise, you know, I'm going to get punched in the face.
Yeah.
Versus now it's about everybody but me.
Yeah.
All right. So how did you
take from a hot to a cold and make it a warm?
Yeah. Or how did you take that cold and make it warm too?
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head with the whole personal training and the whole MMA community. The thing that I gained the most in MMA, and this is what I'm really trying to emphasize, and this is what Caloric Killer is all about, is build strength, build confidence.
Okay.
You know, that's my motto for my business. That's what I gained in MMA was the confidence, where it's just like, it's crazy when you walk around and you realize like, hey, like they can't hurt me, like, or you know, they can't do anything. Or if there was a fight, like, hey, I can defend my loved ones, you know, mm-hmm. if walking around like, you know, downtown or whatever, like I can defend my wife, you know, it's like that kind of confidence is it's amazing. And I really take that into the personal training aspect because I want to give that same confidence. Obviously, I don't want people walking around like, hey, no, like I can beat up anybody. Like that's not the case at all. But it's that inner feeling of strength, okay. You know, that I'm really trying to achieve in not only my clients, but the people I train here at Beatbox, the people who I interact with, you know, over the phone at work or just whatever the case may be, whoever I'm trying to talk with, I'm just trying to help like build up that, once again, that self-love, self-confidence, where it's like, hey, like, don't be so hard on yourself, like, and don't walk around, you know, thinking you're just like an average person, like have a chip on your shoulder, like realize like, hey, like you were born, like you beat like one out of like 300 million sperms, you know, to actually be developed. Like you're amazing. Like you're beautiful.
that's interesting. That's an awesome way to put it. What's a better feeling? And be honest, getting pummeled in the face or let's say hypothetical. Or teaching a class at a beatbox class.
What's a better feeling?
Yeah.
Oh, teaching a beatbox class.
Are you being honest?
100%. 100%.
Is it anything like getting punched in the face?
Getting punched in the face is great, man. That's a great feeling. Like I highly recommend this to anybody who's listening. Like, no. So getting punched in the face or just being in the cage in general, it's a great feeling. Because one, you realize like nothing else about the world matters. If you're going through a hard breakup, if you're failing a test or a class in school, if you just lost your job, like if somebody, a relative just died, excuse me, nothing else matters. You have tunnel vision, you're focused. Yeah. Like half the time when I was in there fighting, I didn't even notice there was a ref in there. I didn't even occur that there was ever a ref. Like those guys are like Houdini, like I, like whatever the case may be. Yeah, they disappear, man, when you're in there. And you're focused, man. You got that tunnel vision and you're just like hands up. You're ready to go. The only thing you're thinking about is how am I going to take down this challenge ahead of me? And, you know, that's a great feeling too. Teaching a beatbox class. Let's say, example, I got somebody doing push-ups on the ground and then they have to come up to the bag, land 25, 30 punches, go back to the ground doing push-ups until I tell them to stop. They start off good. They then get a little bit weaker and weaker, weaker as the round progress. Let's say they're down on the ground. Let's say a female goes from doing push-ups on her feet, you know, to push-ups on her knees. Yeah. I'd stop at the right moment. I'm like, hey, like, what are we here for? Like, you know, you can do them on your knees. Let's keep on pushing up because you're already doing them, just regular push-ups. Like, let's go back to that. Let's work on that, you know, and we'll go back on the bags. Let's say her hands are here. She's landing some less punches. Let's say her guard goes down a little bit. She's landing kind of smaller punches, you know, not as fast, not as powerful. It's like, that's my opportunity right there to just empower her, to show her like, hey, we have 30 seconds left on the clock. How bad do you want it? Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't call you. I didn't text you, say, hey, come to class. Like, you wanted to do that. Like, you have that inner feeling. You have that fire already. Now, let's emphasize on it. Like, let's really come in here, give it 110% for this next hour for this workout, and grind it out because you're going to love yourself even more afterwards.
Yeah, it seems that that same focus, and again, if I'm putting words in your mouth, please tell me. But, and I don't want to blow up your spot either. But that same focus you have when you're in the octagon, that singular focus, you now have that same focus, but not to, you know, beat somebody up, but to get that client or those clients through that class.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Okay.
Very cool. Nailed it. What's next for you, man?
What's next for me is basically just help inspire the world. I mean, that's a
mouthful, man.
Yeah, it is, man. It's a lot. I have big things I'm working out right now with Zas and Anjua.
Okay.
This is the first time anybody's going to be hearing about this, but I'm actually
so it's exclusive.
It's very exclusive. Okay. Yeah, I don't have anything like as far as vendors, as far as athletes picked out, not even a location picked out. And hopefully, I'm going to be working on that the next few months. Okay. But I'm working with Zas and Anjua. And then Life Act, which is a suicide prevention charity based in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And so I had this idea. I told Zas about it, and he said, I love it. He's like, let's make this happen. So my goal for 2018, fingers crossed, hopefully March, maybe May. You know, I don't know the time. Got to get all my apples in a row first.
Yeah.
But I want to do a charity for suicide prevention. I want it to be called Squats Over Suicide. So like me, like I said, talked about earlier, like when I was a kid, like I really found the barbell as a way to get out of my own head. Mm-hmm. I find that there's a lot of kids now, they just need an outlet, you know, where it's like a lot of kids holding their emotions or they're just wrapped up in their head too much where it's like, hey, let's use something as great as fitness to get out of our own heads, to really like learn that self-development of confidence, self-development of love, and see how strong you really are. So my game plan, and if anybody in Cleveland is listening to this, please reach out to me, calorieclifffitness.com. You guys can email me. I basically want to get a whole bunch of Cleveland-based fitness gyms together. Okay. So, you know, Cleveland-based vendors. So like Numa, you know, Ralabala that we talked about. I want to get people like that where –
They got called out just now.
Yeah, they got called out. I'll be reaching out to them soon. I basically want to get some athletes together, you know, have a guys division and a girls division, and I want to have vendors, you know, all around and basically have a squat-a-thon, barbell back squats, where it's just the athletes, you know, and it's going to be a 50-50 raffle at the end. Life Act gave me the idea for that, where they can then bet on a particular athlete and who's going to win the event on how many more squats they can do. And it's going to be up to the athlete to actually go out there and say like, hey, like, will you sponsor my first 50 squats? Okay. Will you sponsor my first 30 squats? You know, I don't know what we're going to do as far as
– So they're basically – okay. So you're
saying. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do as far as the weights, because I know for a fact we're not going to do body weight squats. People will be out there for days.
Yeah.
So within a like 2 to 3 hour gap, you know, I'm thinking maybe 50% of their body weight max or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, make it what's the word I'm looking for? The barrier to entry.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think you want people thinking this is a powerlifting meet.
No, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, so if anybody in Cleveland wants to reach out to me on that, you know, CrossFit gyms, any kind of gym, or if you have like a local company in Cleveland that you want to just get some advertisement for, all this is going to be 100% donation based to Life Act. So it's just a good way to help raise awareness for suicide prevention.
Okay. So are you looking for this to be a one-time fundraiser, or do you want this to be?
I want it to be annually. Like
okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
I really want to make a difference. I want to start in Cleveland and then hopefully, you know, 10, 15, you know, years down the road, this could be, you know, somebody else could be doing the whole entire thing, you know, in a different location where it's just squats over suicide becomes a national
like barbells for boobs.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Same thing.
You should, I don't know, maybe reach out to them and just.
Maybe I should.
Just, hey, email them. Hey, I'm starting to do this.
Yeah. It's not a bad deal at all.
I take this conversation offline, but you know, just email her. And be like, hey, I want to start something. And she could, I think she's probably, she'll be more than willing to help you out and give you like maybe ideas or pointers, right?
Yeah. Cause that's so exactly a good point.
They're doing a really good job. Obviously, they've grown.
Yeah. That completely went over my head, man. Until you mentioned that. Thank you for that.
Mic drop. All right. where can people find you? And as always, show notes. And thank you, Heather Mersch, for pointing this out. She had a great question. But if you're listening to this on iTunes or Stitcher, you will not see the show notes there. So if you want to find the show notes for any podcast, you actually have to go to our website, and it's all on that specific episode. So plug away.
Where they can find me
at?
Yeah. CaloriKillerFitness.com. On there, I have all my social media links, Instagram, CaloriKillerFitness, Facebook, my YouTube channel that I'm slowly trying to get
it's
up
about
there
to blow up
soon. But that's about it. If anybody has any questions, especially over the squats over suicide, or have any viewpoints or ideas that I can implement into that project, calorieclifffitness@gmail.com. And that's it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Joe, it's been a pleasure. I had a fucking
blast,
man.
Boss.
Thank you. Take it easy, guys.
Another amazing episode in the books, fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com, Facebook and Instagram @unchartedperformance, and if Twitter is your thing, @reachuncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.